Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Weight loss solutions are not one size fits all. Hers makes it simpler to get started and stick with a weight loss plan backed by expert guided online care that puts your weight loss goals first. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you. With 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
So we'll get started.
But first of all, I want to just say thank you so much for inviting me on. This is please bear with me. This is my first ever podcast, but I'm really excited to be here. So thank you very much for that.
Do you know what it is? I like people with good energy. And that's okay. The thing that I attract to. And that's you've got good energy, you've got good morals, do you know what I mean? Like
thank you, darling.
You've kind of on the same sort of journey as me, I suppose. We've spoken about that before.
So. Yeah, no, it is. It's I was really flattered when you asked, and I was like, oh my god, yes, love this. Let's do it, Aileen.
No, definitely, so, because I kind of had a wee bit of a hiccup at the start. We've spoken about that. I don't talk about it on the podcast because I don't bring any negativity to it.
Of course.
And I don't engage in any drama. And so that drama can stay where it is. And I'll just keep doing my thing as I was going to do.
Absolutely, babe, and that's all she can do.
The only way I can go through it and just ignore. I don't know if anything's been said about my sins because, like I said, I don't go and look for it. I don't. If anybody tells me, that's fine. That's up to them. But if I've not heard it or seen it with my own eyes, then
that's it. And like I said to you, sweetheart, you know, there's if anybody that's followed me, they're aware that I've been in my own share of. Arguments and disagreements. You can only be responsible for your own actions, sweetheart. That's it. So regardless of what anybody else says, sod them.
Exactly. Like, just everybody just got on with your own life and the past is the past and nothing can be done about the past.
So. Exactly, darling.
So anyway, so just as a wee, in case anybody's not on TikTok or familiar with TikTok, this is Caitlin. I first met Caitlin on TikTok, although this is the first time we've ever spoke face-to-face.
Yes, it is.
So Caitlin's kind of been on the same sort of journey, or on the same sort of journey I've been on. She's had her own sort of mental health journey. We'll talk about that. And she's also now retraining to help people that are going through their own mental health journey as well. So when did your sort of mental health start deteriorating? What sort of age were you?
So I noticed I'd say quirks round about when I was 17.
Right, okay.
It started off with the odd palpitation. The only way I can describe it is maybe my bottle used to go a little bit. And I'd be like, oh, that's new. I don't know what that is. And I kind of brushed it off. I'd heard friends in the past talk about anxiety attacks and panic attacks, I'd never truly felt one until I remember coming home from college one day and I was on the bus and I just got really hot. My heart was pounding in my chest. I couldn't catch my breath and I was like, I'm dying. Something's not right. Something's going on with my body. I jumped off the bus in a lovely place called Highton Village And I ran to my grandmother's, and I was in such a fluster and such a panic. And I was saying to my grandma, you know, please help me. I'm dying. And she was like, you're not. Take a deep breath. Calm down. And that was my first experience, I think, of an anxiety attack, which was not pleasant.
Yeah, the very first time I ever took a panic attack, and I was in my own house at the time, and my dad used to come over on a Saturday before he moved down south. So he came over on a Saturday to see me, my brother, and my son. I only had one son at the time. And I was sitting there, and I honestly thought I was having a heart attack. Like, I could feel this pain. I couldn't speak. There was no words coming out.
Yeah.
And like that, I thought I was going to die. So I totally get it.
Yeah, well, they say it's, you know, the fight or flight response, and all I wanted to do was run away. It got, and from that moment, I think you kind of, you focus, and this is how I believe that, you know, mental health kind of spirals out of control, because from that first initial reaction of how you respond to an anxiety or a panic attack, you're constantly dreading for the next one. You're constantly waiting for it to happen, which in turn is you're kind of forcing it to happen to yourself because you're waiting
you're
for that.
You're preparing yourself for it happening rather than thinking that'll never happen again.
Exactly. Which then, and that's why there's a vicious cycle with it. So a couple of months after that, I was waiting for this moment to happen, and in the end, I was constantly making trips to the local hospital, constantly having tests done, because I was like, no, it's not anxiety, it's not panics, and in the end, you know, my parents were like, you need a ward named after yourself, the amount of times you're at that hospital, and I was like, I know, but in that moment, it's so surreal. You think nobody has felt how you're feeling in that precise moment. It's very fearful.
And I always say, like, when you're on a mental health journey, regardless of what it is, because obviously we know there's some things that happen through things that maybe happened to you in the past or whatever else, but there's also some people that have got, like, maybe like schizophrenia, things like that, that they're born with it. It's not something that's triggered it necessarily. And when you're going through it, you think you're the only person. So it's very, very lonely.
It is. It's very lonely. And, you know, it's only now, because I've experienced it for so long, I can actually look back and think, Jesus, if I'd have listened at the beginning of somebody, you know, a professional or somebody who was experiencing it at the time, if I'd have listened to them say to me, like, you can change this, you need to change your mindset, you need to accept it. And it's that as soon as you feel that initial flutter or that initial trigger, you need to redirect your focus onto something completely different. And although it may feel uncomfortable for the first 3 or 4 minutes, it's how you react. That's what prolongs the anxiety and the panic, I found.
I think as well, like, obviously we're older now and we've gone through it for so long. So, like you say, experience of it, but also I think with age, you can see things differently as well. You see things through different eyes.
Yes, very much so. Because like I said, I was always a happy-go-lucky. I was always the clown of the class. I was always making people laugh. And look, only through doing a psychology degree, I've thought to myself, is that a mechanism of some sort of protection? Instead of people making fun of me, have I made fun of myself?
I do that.
And it's only divulging, because I do believe it starts, unless you're born with it, I do believe something happens during childhood. And, you know, unfortunately, my mum, she was diagnosed with OCD when I was younger.
Okay.
So a lot of her protective behaviours are learned behaviours, which unfortunately I have took on as growing up. Because my mum always said to me, you know, wherever me or your dad are, you will always be safe. Outside world is bad. Where me and dad are, you're safe. And I think once you hear that a lot growing up, you know, when you get older and you've been told to go and live your life and, you know, this is the big bad world that you've
And
got to
you're
go
just
into.
thinking what you've always been told is, oh, I'm going out of that world that isn't safe.
Exactly. And, you know, staying with mum and dad is. So I do believe, and I've spoke with mum about this, I do think that was my initial trigger for
and
mental
it's
health
not
issues.
Blaming your mum for
No,
anything at
absolutely
all.
not.
It's just that's just how it's worked for you. That's how it's went. That's how you started. That's how your journey began.
It is, and it's sad because my mum's like, she beats herself up over a little bit because the last thing she ever wanted to do was pass on her mental
Mum
health
guilt.
to any of the children.
We feel guilty. Mums feel guilty about everything. So regardless of what we do, we always feel guilty. We're always worried that we were not doing something right, or could we do more?
Absolutely.
That all the time.
And I've always said to her, you know, do not blame yourself, because I understand, you know, when you, I mean, I can't relate because I'm not a mum, but I can sympathise with, yeah, of course you bring this person into the world who you solely provide for. And unfortunately, you do hear horror stories that are happening in the world, children being kidnapped, illnesses unfortunately happen to children. And you just want to do everything in your power to keep them safe. So I get that massively. I think moving forward, like now me and Rachel are talking about having children one day, and I've said to her, I will have to be really mindful of my own mental health. As much as it's going to petrify me, allowing my child to go and do, you know, be a child and grow up and do a thing.
When I was going through, I first started showing real signs when my oldest was about 3, maybe. But my mum says it was a long time before that. But personally, that's when I first started seeing signs, but still didn't tell anybody. I've hidden my whole mental health journey from both my boys up until the last a year or two. They only started finding out. I think it's one of the ones where I don't want them to worry that they're going to end up the same as me, or things like that. So, but I had an eating disorder really, really bad. When I was in, I say it started about 24, my mum says, teenager
a
years.
A little bit earlier.
But nobody ever said anything to me, so that I just presume that. But it was really bad when I was in my 20s, and I went down to like 5, 5½ stone when I was at my worst.
Jesus.
And even then, none of my doctors or my psychiatrist, psychologist, nobody like that thought about trying to tackle this. They were always just trying to figure out where my mental health was going wrong. Was it bipolar? Was it just clinical depression? Was it this? Was it? And nobody ever focused on my eating disorder. So and it's never really going to get fixed. So that went on and off for about 15 years. And then I think I was in my early 30s before I said, I need to go to an eating disorder clinic. You need to sort this. And I went to this eating disorder clinic, and it was the worst place I went to. And this doesn't mean that everybody's experience is going to be like this. So if you are, definitely get help. It was just one particular nurse that I had problems with, because it was almost as if she was threatening you. If you don't gain weight, if you don't do this, if you don't do that. Then I started to get to the point where I didn't want to go to the appointments, because all I kept thinking about was this blue bag that had the scales in it. And if I wasn't the right weight on these scales this day, then she was going to take me off the boots, because that was a threat I kept getting every time.
Wow.
And then as I kind of came out the other end of it, that's what made me think, no, I want to help people, but not the way she thinks that she's helping people.
Absolutely.
And I paused.
Hold that. I can kind of relate to that, sweetheart, because when, so I've had, I'd say, two severe breakdowns, so to speak, since I was 17. I had one when I was, it was after surgery within the hospital. I became really poorly. Because I think anybody who undergoes surgery, it's quite a traumatic event anyway. And you're kind of like, you know, and the doctor said that that's the closest you'll ever get to death. And I was like, why would you say that to me? So that was a huge trigger for me personally, because obviously mine is, I have a death phobia. I suffer with health anxiety. But then the second time was last year. But in fact, it started in 2021. I was on top of my game. I was managing two bars. I had a lovely dog who I idolized, Flo, God rest her soul. We were both happy, healthy, everything was going good. Unfortunately, COVID hit. You're getting told, obviously, every day, going outside is bad. It's really bad for you. It's really bad for you. Stay indoors, stay indoors, stay indoors. And then all of a sudden, it was like, no, you can go out now. It's fine.
So when you were told to stay indoors, did that trigger a memory from what your mum used to say to you when you were younger?
Looking back now, I think in the back of my mind, absolutely, 1,000%. I do think, I think it had taken a huge toll on me, because I'd created this safe space in my home. I was making sure nobody was coming in. There was no sign of cross contamination. There was no way that we were going to get poorly. Even to the point when we were ordering shopping and stuff to be delivered to the home, I was bleaching down the bags, everything like that, which I don't think is right, because people who
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou. You to access affordable doctor trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.
Possibly do have OCD tendencies. You're solidifying what they believe, you know?
Yeah.
So, unfortunately, then we lost Flo. She passed away in the November. I lost my grandfather in the January, my grandmother in the June, and it was just my whole world collapsed. And I was like, "This can't be." I was on top of the world. So then I kind of had this feeling that I don't deserve to be happy. Look at what I'm happy, and all these bad things have happened.
Yeah.
I went to the. It got really bad because I'd convinced myself that I was allergic to every single food on the planet.
No.
All because the trigger of that was, you know, when you can buy them American sweet boxes?
Yep.
I bit into a moon pie and had
Okay.
a massive panic attack. But in my mind, I was having an allergic reaction.
Right, okay.
So I was like, I can't have soya, I can't have gluten, I can't have milk, can't have and
Nuts
you
was a huge one.
nuts was a massive issue. And I was going to the GP, I was asking for blood tests, I want allergy tests, da 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 da. And even though the results, excuse me, even though the results were coming back all completely normal, I was like, no, it's definitely not. And I was arguing with the doctor over it. In the end, she said, I'd like you to go and see the mental health team. And I was like, okay. She was like, I think, because I was 13 stone and I'd dropped down to 10. I'd looked awful and I'd lost 3 stone in the space of 6 months. And the mental health nurse, her suggestion for me to get better was to sit in the sun for 15 minutes a day and take magnesium. And I was like, that's your diagnosis? And she was like, yes. And I was like, oh, wow. Okay. And she was like, that's all you need to do. Everything will be fine. And when I left, I thought, surely not. That's not what a mental health nurse has just said to me. So they had an MDT meeting, which I'm not sure whether the viewers are aware, but an MDT meeting is a group of psychologists, mental health nurses, doctors, psychiatrists, all getting together and discussing you as a patient. And they kept telling me I was fit. There was nothing wrong. Talking therapies, carry on doing whatever you're doing. I hadn't even been offered medication. I hadn't had anybody speak to me.
Had you had any sort of mental health team previous to that from when you were in your teens?
Yes.
So they would have had a record of that?
Exactly, which I didn't understand because my previous psychiatrist had diagnosed me with BPD, which I didn't accept because I didn't believe... I just didn't believe that I had BPD. I'd read up on it and I was like, that doesn't really sound like me. So there was a lot. I was like, you haven't even looked at me. And I was so furious. So I ended up going to PALS and putting a complaint in saying, you know, I've not spoken to anybody on the phone. Nobody's even took a look at me. I'm kind of, in a way, self-harming because I wasn't eating.
Yeah,
I'd lost a lot of weight. I became a recluse. I wasn't getting out of bed. And then a lady from PALS called me back and they were like, I'm so sorry, you've endured this. And all of a sudden I had all these offers then from the mental health team and from different charities and different communities within the area, all
but
wanting to help.
But it's awful that you had to go through that and had to complain before you actually get what you should have got.
Absolutely.
To begin with.
Absolutely. And it's sad because I know certain individuals who don't necessarily suffer with mental health, who abuse the system. Yep. And they're getting CPN nurses, they're getting psychiatrists come to the home, they're getting all the help on hand. And it's just to tick a box on a form.
Yeah, yep, 100%. I've heard of that quite a lot. And then the people that really need the help are kind of kicked to the curb to an extent.
Exactly.
And then I've got, like I've told you before, I'm a private counsellor. The reason I chose to do private counselling was because of my son. So my youngest son's autistic.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes he can't leave the house for like weeks and weeks on end, so I've got to be here. I laugh at it because it's our normal life. People might be like, why are you laughing? Mm-hmm. But this is just us and it's him. That's just him at work. So I'll get a text from school, help, come save me, come rescue me.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh my God. And I'm like, go and speak to such and such. I can't. They're not in their office. I can't speak to them. I can't do that. You know I can't do that. And I'm like, oh.
Oh God, lovely.
And then that's when the mum guilt kicks in with me because I'm trying to get him to stay in school and trying to get him to talk to us, but he can't. So when we go through the whole, almost like ticking the boxes to right, try this, try that. Once we've went through everything, I've got to then just go up and get them and take them.
God love
them. It's funny to us because that's just him, and we know I normally know when it's going to happen.
Especially
after school holidays when he's first settling in, so his first week will be okay. Second, because they normally go back midweek, don't they? So they get a couple of days. So the couple of days normally okay. And then from the following week onwards, I might get the odd wee text or I can't go to school today. I can't do this. I can't do it. Are the uniforms not fitting right? Because it's got really high sensory issues. And a lot of it is to do with like materials and smells and sounds. And he's got everything. He's got them all.
Well, routine, I suppose, is a huge thing with autistic children. Because I know our Tony's little boy, we're currently at the starting point with him and getting him diagnosed and stuff. And I know if you upset his routine, it's game over. So it must be really hard for him having such a big time away from school.
Primary school, so from 5 to like 11. So in Scotland, they go in nursery 3 to 5. Then from 5 mm-hmm. to 11, they go to primary school. Then 12 till 18, they go to secondary school. I know it's slightly different in England. Nursery was a hit and a miss. So the first 3 months he went to nursery, he had to be peeled off me. He just wouldn't. But that was detachment issues. It just didn't want to leave me because it was always just me and him. And he went to primary school. And he was fine, but he would like, he couldn't sit still. He couldn't sit in his chair for too long. He'd be bouncing about. And one of the times the teacher asked for a book, I don't know what happened between him and this teacher, just clashed. They never argued or anything, but they just didn't click at all. He was only,
yeah,
he was six at the time, because I held him back in your starting school because he just wasn't ready. So she asked him for the book and they went like that and threw it at her. But that's just because she's not asked for it the way she should have asked. There's like all
yeah.
these different things, and it's like a teacher would come into the classroom that wasn't supposed to be in the classroom, so he automatically thinks negative. So he just went,
Oh.
I'm gonna get in trouble. They're not supposed to be in here. I'm in trouble. He just looks at the worst case scenario. And it took me until he was eight, I think he was, before anybody listened to me. Nobody, I
Oh,
had said from before he even started nursery, I think he's autistic. Nobody would listen. Oh, he's just a boy, he's just, but oh, he's just this. Everybody had an excuse, but never gave me an answer. Nobody would ever like ask somebody else to have a second opinion or whatever else.
yeah.
And I spoke to the head teacher a couple of times at the school, and even his teachers were saying to me there possibly is something, but they would never like go and say to the head teacher, I think you're
Refer,
right.
yeah.
And then I get this one teacher, and when I started saying different things to her, she's like, yeah, let's go to the head teacher. And that's when people started listening. It's
See, it's funny that because, autism and mental health, because the umbrella is so wide, because a lot of the times, I've gone in and they've asked me if I suffer with ADHD,
right, okay.
and they're now leaning towards, is this ADHD instead of mental health issues? My wife, I hope she doesn't mind me saying this, Rach, she's currently. She's waiting for an autism assessment
Right, okay.
because she suffered with mood swings and depression, and she's always felt like she's not belonged in social circles or anything like
And
that. And
females can mask it a bit better, which means it doesn't get picked up as much.
exactly, because she is high functioning. I mean, when it comes to academia and stuff like that, she's always sailed through it. She's very intelligent. She's a punctuation is next to none, but
She's
there
not
is,
really get social thing.
yes, yeah, in regards to social
Yeah.
cues and stuff, she's way off sometimes. Now she's under the mental health team, and they're saying to her, well, we're gonna have to wait for your autism assessment, because if it does turn out you are autistic, then we can't help you.
But they could still be giving her support, because at the minute she's not autistic at the minute in black and
Exactly.
white. So they could be giving her the support that she needs until they find out otherwise, and then whoever picks up then can
Yeah.
take over.
It
It's
is. It's strange, isn't it? Yeah. I think this country especially, we need a huge investment into the mental health
well,
services.
that's what I was going to say. So I've said earlier on that I do private counselling, and one of the times I got one of our local community mental health teams messaged me saying our funding's been cut, can we send people to you? And I
Oh,
thought,
wow.
that's ridiculous, because are you going to pick up the tab for them, or are you going to expect them to pay?
Well, that, yeah, exactly. And
Because
this was one of the main
I wouldn't
things.
like to think that somebody has the impression they're going to get their mental health treatment free, and then the next time they're told, oh no, sorry, we can't take you, but this person can, but at a charge. I've actually, because a few people on social media who I've came across and whatever else, I've ended up reaching out to quite a few people and offering free mental health treatment, help, support, counselling, whatever you want to call it, just because I know the one, they financially can't afford it. And two, I would never see anybody not go without the help. So
Of course.
I do have some people that I don't charge at all, because I would
Yeah.
never see anybody not get the help they need. And they're not getting offered it anywhere else.
Well done, sweetheart. And that was one of the biggest reasons why I chose to do my psychology degree, because first and foremost, I wanted to get better myself. And it was an 18-month waiting list to speak to somebody in the therapy services. I can't afford to go private.
No.
We did do one private session, didn't we? You paid for it, which was £220. And that was with Anxiety UK. Because I was losing the will to live with that. Because even though I had a fear of dying, I got to the point where I'd had enough.
Was it a psychologist that you seen, or was it just a counsellor? Or
it was just a counsellor. It wasn't even a psychologist.
£220. That's terrible.
£220. Tell me what happened with that. I left because she just was just like, she just listened. She couldn't give me any advice.
Yeah.
So that was one of the biggest issues, because I thought, well, what better way than to learn what I'm going through and help myself and get a degree at the same time. Another issue was I've buried 3 lads I went to school with, and I was absolutely devastated. I was like, I seen these lads like last week, because I was running bars at the time.
Yep.
I was like, they were in having a pint literally a couple of days ago and they were fine.
Do you know, I was sitting thinking just a couple of weeks ago, because we've buried a few friends over the years, but recently we've buried quite a few friends, and it's not all to do with mental health. Some are like cancer and things, but I've noticed that in our sort of generation, there's a lot of young deaths. And the other thing as well is, every time you go onto social media or you turn the telly on, watch the news, read a paper, there's somebody gone missing and then they're found. Yeah. You just think we need to, women are a bit better at going and asking for help, although some still don't, because they think, oh, I'm too busy, I don't have time for that. But men,
we
stop thinking that men need to be men, and inverted
commas.
They need to stop thinking they need to be this hard sort of caveman type thing. And they need to start thinking about the reality of, if you don't start your sort of journey of getting help with your mental health, it's just going to continue to get worse.
And absolutely.
Some people do need to hit rock bottom before they start climbing the ladder again. I get that. Mm. But it's when you don't have that at the back of your head, right, I might need to get help at some point.
Yeah. I'm completely with you on that, lovely. We need to take the stigmatism. Is it stigmatism?
Stigma, sorry.
The stigma away from...
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com. Apply.
The mental health subject, you know, I understand in some people's eyes it's still a bit taboo.
Yeah.
You know, you see a broken leg, you go, oh, that person's got a broken leg, Jesus.
Yeah.
Just because you don't see the brain doesn't necessarily mean it's not broken.
I think there's also a lot of anger in this country when it comes to mental health.
There's a lot of what?
Anger.
There is, absolutely.
There is. And there's so many people that think, oh, just get on with it, just do this, just do that, whatever. And what you don't realise is, it, like we said at the beginning, it can be something that you're born with, but it can also be something that's been triggered. So you don't know what goes on behind closed doors. Like, when I had mind disorder, when I was quite bad with it, and my mum's a nurse, bear that in mind, and my mum used, her answer was always, just eat something, which never, ever helped. Just eat something. But you're doing this to yourself. Blah, blah, blah. And you think, that's a nurse saying that? Now,
yeah.
Not saying anything bad about my mum, but if a nurse is going to say that, what's somebody that doesn't have any knowledge in that field going to think or say?
Exactly. 1,000%. And it is, it's, I do think a huge part of mental health, when you acknowledge that you think, oh, you know, I'm feeling a little bit low, I'm feeling a bit stressed out, and oh, I'm a bit nervous about this up and coming exam, or you know, I've got to address a situation or a fallout within the family. Communication is key. And I know it's always easier to speak to a stranger than it is somebody that you know and love, because there's no judgment. But I cannot stress enough, bottling up is not the way to go. Try and be as open and honest as you can.
Yeah, and if you don't feel as if you can go and ask for the help yourself, ask somebody to do it for you. Ask a loved one and a family member to go with you and ask for help, or to phone up your doctor and make the appointment for you. Do whatever it takes. And you, I say it quite a lot on my podcast as well. If you're going to look for help and ask for help, there's different ways you can do it. So you can go to your GP initially and ask, potentially, hopefully get referred. You won't generally get medication straight away, because they like to see how severe the mental health is, how long it's going to go on for, because we all know, we all have blips in our life where we might just feel a bit off. It doesn't mean to say you're depressed. You've got, obviously, that you can go down the private route, but you've got a lot of charities where you can just pick up the phone. You don't have to be face-to-face with anybody. And when you phone up the charities, you don't need to give your name. Everything's confidential. You don't need to give your name. That person doesn't need to see you. And you can phone them as many times as you want, and it'll probably be a different person you speak to each time. But there's definitely issues out there. So if you don't want to sit in front of somebody and say, I feel X, Y, Z, then pick up the phone and at least speak to a charity. At least get that off your chest and hopefully give you a wee bit of advice. And it might make it easier for you to go and speak to somebody else later on.
Absolutely. And I just want to add to that, because I always was against taking medication. So if any of your listeners do suffer with mental health issues, I was very much against taking medication. I didn't want to rely upon a tablet to get me out of bed of a morning. And of course, with health anxiety, you don't want to try nothing new. You don't want to add any issues to your body, so on and so forth. And I got to the wonderful age of 32 without taking any form of antidepressant. But I promise you guys, if you are so low and you see no way out, they are a godsend. Please don't feel disheartened. Don't feel that, you know, you're going to have to rely on this small tablet for the rest of your life. That is not the case.
No, some people only need it temporary. Some people need it permanent. And either way, as long as it's helping you, that's so. What I always say to everybody is, people that don't want to go on medication, now this isn't me promoting medication at all, it's your choice altogether, but if you had a heart condition, you would take a medication, you take that.
Absolutely.
If you had liver, kidney, whatever, if you needed dialysis, if you had cancer, you would potentially go down and get your cancer treatment. And these are all keeping you alive. That antidepressant could be keeping you alive, because it could be the one thing that stops you thinking that you want to do something to yourself.
Absolutely.
And I didn't realise that necessarily when I was going through my journey, because there was a few times they wanted to section me, and I would beg and plead. And what happened was, we came in agreement that the crisis team would come out to me every day. They would never tell me what time they were coming out, so that I couldn't plan anything. They would just turn up on my doorstep. So I would get to a point when I was taking my medication where I thought, I'm all right, I'm fine, I don't need these anymore. And I'd
put
them down the sink, put them in the bin, flush them down the toilet, do whatever I had to do with them, and just stop taking them. And you know, that's the worst thing you can do.
Absolutely.
When you are coming off them, you're supposed to wean yourself off them as well. So I would just stop taking them, and then my doctor would say, right, you need to we need to section you. And I'd be like, no, that's the worst thing. Because I'm scared of hospitals. Not scared of hospitals, but I don't like hospitals and I don't like staying in them. I like staying in my own house and that's it. So they would just send the crisis team out to me and they would come out every single day and just make sure that I didn't do anything.
Well, to be honest, my wife and my dogs and my family are the reason why I'm still here, because I did get to the point where I was like, absolutely not, I can't go on. I was in constant state of arousal, of fear, you know. And I ended up having to go for an ECG, and my pulse was, which I feel quite let down about. I was at 134 beats per minute, but my average heartbeat was about 150. I thought I can do better than 134. But they ended up putting me on, it's a beta blocker called Bisperidol by Soprolol. And they started me off at 2.5. And when I was like, the doctor sat me down and she said, listen, I really need you to take this medication. It's important. We don't want to, you know, your heart is so high at the moment. We need to bring you down and just relax you a little bit. So I was like, okie doke. I took it. Oh my God, the feeling. I just went, and it was such a calming feeling. And then obviously I started the sertraline, and they started me off on 50 milligrams.
Yeah.
And after about 6 weeks, I was like, I feel a little bit better, but not significantly. She then increased me to 100. And I thought, I feel quite upbeat. I'm feeling, this is wonderful. And I felt braver when it came to challenging myself in certain aspects. But even though I was still going out, I still was having the odd palpitation and the little nervous tummy and so on. So then she said, okay, we're going to put you up to 150. And when I started taking the 150, I was just exhausted nonstop. I just wanted to sleep all day, every day. And I knew myself that was too strong for me.
Yeah.
So I brought myself back down to 100. And listen, they're not a miracle.
No.
But, and you know, and you will still find that you may have the odd up and down now and then, but it will not be nowhere near as bad as what you've faced in the past.
And they allow you to try and live your life the way you want to live it.
Absolutely.
Rather than being that recluse. Or I used to cry my eyes out even just going to the shops to get a pint of milk, because I did not want to be outside. If somebody chapped my door, I'd be hiding in my bedroom, didn't want to answer the door. I get really bad migraines, and just recently they've been awful. I don't know if it's because I'm perimenopausal or what it is, that whole hormone thing, but yeah, they're really bad. So I had one that lasted about 2 weeks recently. And I was that busy trying to take pain relief for the migraine, I kept forgetting to take my antidepressants, because I'm back on antidepressants again. And after 10 days, I was starting to imagine things and thought people were what. Like, I was just going through that whole paranoid psychosis.
Yeah.
And the penny dropped. I've not took my tablets. But then see, once I started taking them again, I was fine.
That's it. And you know yourself, I mean, at the moment, I'm doing quite well. They do think that my hormones play a huge part in my mental health. So at the moment, I'm about to come on my period. So my mood's quite low. I'm feeling quite lethargic. I've noticed I feel a little bit anxious more than usual. But I can put that down to something.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
This is how I feel. But do I think I'm ready to come off the medication as of yet? Not as of yet, because there is some things I'd like to work on. I'd like to be more comfortable within myself and more comfortable doing tasks alone and not having my wife there with me, being able to go shopping on my own and be able, if I was to have a panic attack or to go into panic, be able to deal with it myself. Once I've reached that goal, then I'll think about coming away from the medication. But until then, you know, don't be so... I think what I'm trying to say to the guys is, if you do need them and you think they are helping, don't be so in a rush to come off them.
Yeah.
Do it at your own pace.
And I think as well, as you go through your journey, you know when you are feeling a bit better and not feeling
absolutely.
Better. So when you start to recognise that, it'll always be easier for you to go and ask for help. So if you do come off your medication, and always speak to your doctor before you come off it. If you do come off it, always bear in mind the options there if you need to go back on it again, because I've been on and off and on and off medication for over 20 years. And I've only just started back on it again in the last year or so, maybe 2 years, I don't know, because...
And that's it, don't be so disheartened.
Yeah.
You know, if you do decide to come off it and you start to see yourself decline, don't be like, oh God, I'm going to have to go back on. Don't be disheartened. That just means, okay, you may have been on 100 milligrams, but this time you may only need 50.
That's it. And think of it as this, a little pick-me-up. It'll help you.
Absolutely.
It'll lift your mood and it'll let you, again, on your working day or your family day, be able to go on holidays with your family, days out, nights out with your friends, whatever it is that that's your mental health stopping you from doing, this wee tablet might just help you.
Absolutely. And I can't really speak on men's perspectives because I'm not a man, but especially with women, because of our hormones fluctuating every month anyway, although you may think, oh, I'm having a mood swing and it may be due to me periods, da 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 da, you could be quite sensitive actually to the hormones that are fluctuation. You could be, you know, sensitive to testosterone, you could be sensitive to estrogen, you could be sensitive to progesterone, and it's about stabilizing that, because not a lot of people know this, but when a female goes to the toilet and has a wee, all of her hormones come out in a wee. So if you are missing a hormone and need that replacing, that is why we have antidepressants today. So double check that it's not a hormone issue.
That's the thing, and that's what I tell people. Sometimes your mental health, it can be a chemical imbalance, it can be an imbalance of your hormones.
Yeah.
And sometimes it just needs that wee bit of balancing out. And
absolutely,
that's not a bad thing. It's just, no, we're all different, we're all made up different. If we were all the same, life would be boring.
Absolutely. Like you said, if you had anemia, you'd take an iron tablet because your body's not absorbing iron as properly. But I have a funny story that I wanted to share with you guys. Right. I don't know whether people are familiar with different types of therapy. So I have tried CBT, I have tried EMDR, I've tried group therapy, I've tried one-to-one therapy, and this time my psychiatrist said, right, Caitlin, I would like you to try EMDR. And I thought, oh, okay, well, what is this? And you'll have to quote me if I'm wrong, but I think it's eye movement something response. I don't know what the D actually stands for. But basically, you have a therapist and you sit down and you talk together. And the way they get you to process your thoughts is they're meant to tap on your left and your right simultaneously. So as you talk about your triggers, when somebody taps either side, it helps your brain process. Because the way I was explained was, with the thought process and intrusive thoughts, the way that they work is, imagine them on a conveyor belt.
Yep.
And as they're going around in your mind, your brain goes, okay, I've got to let the dogs out for a wee.
Trying to lose weight? It's time to try Hers. At forhers.com/foryou, you can access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss treatments tailored just for you. These include oral medication kits or compounded GLP-1 injections. Through Hers, pricing for oral medication kits start at just $69 a month for a 10-month plan when paid in full upfront. No hidden fees, no membership fees. You shouldn't have to go out of your way to feel like yourself. Hers brings expert care straight to you with 100% online access to personalized treatment plans that put your goals first. Reach your weight loss goals with help through Hers. Get started at forhers.com/foryou to access affordable, doctor-trusted weight loss plans. That's forhers.com/foryou, forhers.com/foryou. Paid for by Hims and Hers Health. Weight loss by Hers is not available everywhere. Compounded products are not FDA approved or verified for safety, effectiveness, or quality. Prescription required. Restrictions at forhers.com apply.
So that goes forefront of your brain. That's what you got to do. So that's processed. dog something, you forget about it. When it becomes an intrusive thought or a trigger of some sort, it goes round on a conveyor belt and your brain doesn't know how to push past it. So it just keeps going round and round and round. Like a bit of, I suppose, a lost baggage carousel at an airport. And it's like, well, no one's claimed me, so I'm going to keep going around because I'm getting a reaction when it comes to the forefront of your mind. Blah, blah, blah. So unfortunately, when I was younger, I was witness to a traumatic event. And it never really bothered me. But the psychiatric team were putting that down to PTSD. And I could easily speak about it. It wasn't an issue.
What age were you?
I was 16 at the time.
Right, okay.
I don't believe I suffered with PTSD from it. And anyway, we goes into the EDMR and I was really excited and I was like, what do we, you know, what's the plan? And this lovely lady, she was quite unique, I like to say. She was very unique. She was very out there. She had dreadlocks, she was quite hippie-ish, and I thought, oh, she's wonderful, you know, she's fabulous, I love this. And I thought she was going to be gentle with me. Oh my goodness. Oh. Aileen, she pulled out this bamboo stick, honest to God, and she sat in front of me, and she was like, right, we're going to talk about the situation. So I was like, okay. And she went,
was it something you would watch on Channel 4?
She was like, we're going to talk about the evening. And I was like, okay. And she was like, can you talk me through what happened? So I told her. And next minute, right on the side of my knee. And I went, and I let out this scream. And she went, keep talking. So I was like, I said, yeah. And then this happened. And then she went, and she belted me again. And I was like, I wanted to take the bamboo, snap it in half and shove it right up her nose. But when it came out, I was so beaten up by this EMDR. And she was like, I'll see you next week. I said, over my dead body. I couldn't walk. And my psychiatrist and my GP said, why did you not complete the EMDR? I said, she beat me up. She went and truly gave me an item.
Imagine what she's like in the bedroom.
Well, that's it. And I was like, never again will I do that. Now, guys, for anybody who's listening, EMDR is not meant to be like that. It's meant to be quite gentle, quite soothing, mm-hmm. quite relaxing. This woman just, I think she had a bad day and wanted to beat me up. And I swore I'd never do it again. Not to put anybody off from EMDR, but yeah, I thought that's quite a funny story to share with the group. So as you can imagine, when I came out of the session, I was holding myself. I
that
was
could
crying.
Be something good for all females when they're going through their time of the month. That could be a good task for them.
Absolutely. I've never...
You take your frustration out.
Well, that's it. I've never, ever, during a therapy session, asked for my mum. But after that, I was sat there and I was, I want my mum.
And rotten back and forward.
Honest to God. And I think it was a new trigger. That became... trauma. Oh, I was getting beat up by my therapist. Absolutely. Now, even when I see a bamboo stick, I flinch. So yeah, that was it was a very strange situation to be.
Oh no, that's funny.
It was, and looking back now, it was hilarious. And I thought to myself, I can't, you know, I'm not into bondage. I'm not into funny business. But she was just so normal, and I think to myself, looking back now, you know, that's what psychopaths do. Mm-hmm. You're meant to be looking after your clients.
Undercover.
Absolutely, you're meant to look after your patients, and you're meant to be empathetic and sympathetic. And she had this look in her eye, and she was just like, what? Now talk me through it. And I was like, I don't know anymore. I don't know what to say to you. But then when I left, she was just like, oh, it was lovely meeting you. Have a wonderful day. Take care.
I'm away to you. Oh, that's brilliant.
Yeah, so that was one of me awful ideas with therapy. But yeah, it's not meant to be like that, guys. No. I just had a very...
If you go in and she's got dreadlocks, you know you go back out again.
Yeah, absolutely. If she's got dreadlocks and she wears baggy trousers that are quite hippie and funky, please turn around and walk the other way.
So you Once you're at uni, then your psychology degree, what you're thinking about doing after?
So I'm starting my second year in October. I have just passed first year, which is wonderful. Thank you very much. I think I'm going to go towards more the forensic psychology route.
Wish I'd done that years ago.
Yeah, the more I'm learning about it, the more, I mean, I'm a little bit of a weirdo anyway, because I really love murder mysteries, and I like watching documentaries on Netflix and so on and so forth, because not that I want to be in the mindset, but I want to know what makes them tick. Why do they do what they do? Mm-hmm. So I'm thinking about going down, I'm going to go down the forensic psychology route, because not only that, it's working with re-offenders. Yep. And a lot of re-offenders re-offend because they can't adapt to society. Nope. I suppose we've all had a taste of that during COVID. You know, some people find it hard to get back into the real world after being locked away mm-hmm. for 2 years. And unfortunately, that's what's going on with the justice system. That's why people re-offend, because they just
also don't get enough support. They don't get any support.
No, they don't. Well,
it depends. It depends what they've been imprisoned for. But most of them don't get any support when they come out, especially. But it's a bit like homelessness as well. There's a lot of people that live on the streets that actually choose to live on the streets because they feel safer, and it's because they know the environment, mm-hmm. they know who's round about them, whatever, they know where's safe, where's not safe to go, whereas if they're put in a house, it's alien to them, they don't know anybody, they don't know where they
are. Absolutely.
So a lot of them feel safer on the streets than what they do with a roof over their head, which is quite sad, actually.
It's heartbreaking, because some of the stories we've learnt during university, we obviously had to do a module on social science and stuff, but it's heart-rendering that, you know, because they like the routine of having, and I'm talking about offenders here, but because they like the routine of getting up in the morning, having the breakfast, getting told to go to the gym, they want somebody to care for them and look after them. Whereas in society, they may not have family members, they may not have loved ones, they may not have a structure, like you said,
A lot of them offend because it's learned behaviour.
Absolutely.
They've seen that all their life, so they don't know any different, or it could be they've grown up with drugs, whatever, different things round about mm-hmm. them all their life, so they don't know how to live what everybody else would call, in inverted commas, a normal life. They don't know how to do that. They don't know how to start that journey. So they just mm-hmm. copy what they've seen growing up. And there's too many people out there that are very judgmental. And sometimes people are in prison because they're defending themselves. It's not always because they've went out to cause trouble. Sometimes it's defending themselves, and it's just unfortunate things have went too far. Some mm-hmm. people are in prison because they're trying to get food for their kids or whatever it is they're trying to do, try to get money in because they've lost their job, so they've maybe done something that they wouldn't normally do. And it's kind of went the wrong way. So there is people in prison, a lot of them do have good hearts. Obviously, there's some of them that don't, but a lot of people in prison have good hearts.
There is, and I completely agree with what you're saying. I think I'm trying to be politically correct here. Offenders who go out of their way to be evil to another human being, or go out of their way to be evil to an animal,
mm-hmm.
I believe they have no rights in society. But people who shoplift or drug deal or anything, or, you know, I suppose domestic violence is a huge one. We need to get to the root cause of what's causing the offending, re-offending.
On my very first podcast, this is where some of the things started off, right? So we had initially asked for people to write in, because when I first started the podcast, when I first came up with the idea, it was meant to just be me. And then I invited somebody else along to join in because I thought it was a good opportunity for them. So we had asked people to write in. That person only done one podcast with me, and then I just carried on my own because they decided they didn't want to do it anymore. Anyway, we asked people to write in, and there was somebody who wrote in, and she had been sexually abused by her stepfather as a child. It turned out she wasn't the only one. I think her sister had as well. And I had said, apparently the parent, the mum, didn't talk to them anymore because they went to the police. And I had, obviously because I work in the job that I work in, I'd said, gave my advice to the girl, said I hope she gets her family back, but also to bear in mind that we don't know what he's, if he's been that evil to children, we don't know what he's doing to the mum. He could be doing the same to the mum and whatever else. And this spiralled. And yeah, what a bit of hate for that one. But it's reality.
See, the thing
is, if he is hurting the children, he could be hurting the mum as well. He could be doing the exact same to the mum. He could be doing something else to her. He could be threatening her. He could be threatening her kids if she takes their side. All these different things, because these people, their minds work differently. Their minds, they would just see, like, people that don't live that life, that don't hurt people, that don't sexually abuse or whatever else, we would see that as, that's awful. How could he do that? Like, it angers us inside. But somebody that does that, they don't see it that way. They just see that as their sort of normal behaviour. That's just something they do. So they would do it to somebody. It doesn't matter who it is.
It is. And this is where you've got to be professional, because even though I'm still learning and I still find it difficult, you have to, there may be a time when, unfortunately, I have to sit down and have a chat with somebody who has unalived somebody, or somebody who's hurt children or animals. And regardless of my own feelings about the matter, I have to be professional.
You still have to be professional. Because that's the job you chose.
Yeah, and that's the difficult thing, because I have said to my wife, you know, because I am quite a feeling and empathetic person, she said to me, are you sure you're going to be able to do this? Because you're going to hear some horrific stories. And I said, I know, but if I can help and change people's mindsets.
That's the thing. When I was doing my studying and everything, I found it hard when we were studying the part to do with domestic violence, because I've been through that journey myself. So I was really struggling when I was researching and I was writing up things and whatever else. It really, really got to me, because a few times I had to say, I need to walk away from that and take it away for whatever else. So I thought I was going to be the same when I was helping people that have been in that situation. But so far, I've only really had, you could count one hand how many people that have came to me to do with domestic violence, and I've managed to kind of keep my composure and everything else. So I think you do kind of, when you're in that job, see, when you put your clothes on in the morning, you get up, you kind of put on a persona, and you learn to put on, it's almost like acting. You put on a persona and you are the counsellor, you are the psychologist, whatever it is you are. So you're in that mindset when you're at work. And then when you come home, you may think about, I know definitely myself, there's certain situations that people that I'll counsel or whatever else, and when I come home at the end of the day, I am absolutely drained because it's took every part of me. But I still couldn't change my job, because I love what I do. And
absolutely. So, and that's it, you know, to know that you've, and I could, you know, it can be, I believe that any job where you're helping somebody else, it could be massively rewarding, but to know that you've been able to change the mindset of an individual who doesn't no longer want to be here, who is willing to give up everything, and to see them succeed for the rest of the journey of life. I can't even imagine the overwhelming feeling that would.
It's good, and it's just always like, not telling you how to do your job or anything like that when you do it, but you obviously, you change how you do things depending on who's in front of you.
Yeah.
Like, sometimes I'll maybe have teenagers, and depending on what age they are, I'll or even like younger kids, I've had preteens as well, and I make it more of a game as well. So it's not just talking, we play games. So you're getting to know them, but they don't realise you're getting to know what's going on.
Yeah.
You're doing it as a game, you're doing it fun. So it's like, do you know that game where you play and it's like, right, you're not allowed to think of the answer. So it's Coke or Pepsi, blah, 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 cheese, onion, salt and vinegar. Mm. Do you know one of they went? So
yeah, yeah.
I sometimes incorporate that in when I'm doing it with kids or teenagers. And it just makes it a bit more fun, and it's not so military, and you must talk about this, and you must do that, and you must feel this.
Do you know what? There's a charity that I do. Well, I was referred to by the mental health team, and it was absolutely incredible. It was Walk and Talk. I can't think of what it was called. Can you remember? Oh, I can't think of his name, and I can't think of the bleeding charity. That's terrible, that. But basically, it was this gentleman who had been diagnosed with prostate cancer. He was currently in remission, and he'd suffered with mental health in the past, but managed to overcome it. And he decided to put together a charity that, you know, people who reoffenders who didn't know how to adapt into society, people who'd got into a bit of a rut and was unable to leave the home, people who just had stressful jobs or any sort of mental health issue, he would come to the property, have a chat with them, and just go for a walk and a talk. He'd always say, I'm not a therapist, I'm not a counsellor, we're just having a chat, and we're just having a chat and we're going on a walk. I think it was a fantastic idea, because I didn't like the therapy setting. You know, therapist was on one side, I was on another. It was in a medical setting that used to make me feel worse.
Yeah.
With him, we'd just go for a cup of tea, have a little chat, go for a walk. So we were getting the exercise. I was being outside the house.
Yeah.
And offloading. And he said that the idea came to me when I was getting a cab. He said, and I got in a cab, and the first thing you do, you tell your cab, you can't be your secrets, like a bartender, like a hairdresser or a barber. Yeah. You know, you say, oh, I'm having a bad day today. She's doing me head in, or he's doing me head in. And events, I just thought, how much of a good idea would that be? You know, just having a chat going on.
That's one of the options that I offer. So when I do my counselling, you can do it over the phone, video call, or face-to-face. But I also offer the walk and talk thing. And it was because of lockdown. Well, after all the lockdowns, that made me think of that. Not a lot of people do that. It just depends on the weather, because, you know, Scotland, it's always raining.
Of course.
But yeah, it is good. And the fresh air always makes you feel that a wee bit better, I suppose.
It does. Because when I came back from it, I was tired, for one, which helped, because it promoted sleep.
Yep.
Because I wasn't sleeping. I was able to say that day, do you know what? I've been out today.
Yeah.
Considering I didn't like going out, but I've been out today. I've had some fresh air. Who's that off of?
Me.
Okay, go. You know. And I was just like, smashing, fabulous. It was just really enjoyable. So one thing I will say about to your viewers, if you are nervous about going out, you're nervous about talking about your issues, the one thing I will say is a huge part of getting over this, any going out, it's got to be repetitive. Have to do it every day.
Even if you start at 5 minutes, even if you just walk up your path and back in, and then the next day walk up and down your street and back in, then you walk down the block. It does, even if you're only out for 30 seconds the first time, you step foot outside that door, just build it up and build it up every time you go out.
Absolutely, because that was where I was going wrong. I was going out for 2 days on the run and having a third day off. And I was still saying to my wife, oh, do you know what? I'm still anxious when I go out. Why is this happening? And I know myself, if I do not go out every day, I become anxious.
Yeah.
When it comes to going out,
back into that.
It's got to be a repetitive motion, and the more you do it, the the easier it becomes. Like I said, if it could be, it could be just a walk around the block, it could be a walk to the shop and back.
Yep.
It could be, like Aileen said, it could be a walk to the end of your pathway and back. As long as you make that first initial step, that is a huge tick of the box. One of my therapists said to me, you know, she was like, it's the anticipation of going out. Yeah, it is. I found it easier to sit there with just my shoes on at first.
Mm-hmm.
Then after, once I'd seen the anxiety start to subside, pop on my coat and sit there in my coat and in my shoes. Once that the anxiety, and I started to feel a bit comfortable and the anxiety subside, I'd get up and I'd go to the front door. If the anxiety built again, I'd wait for the anxiety to subside. Doesn't matter how long it takes you, as long as you complete that task in question. And you have to do it every day. I cannot stress enough making sure you go every day and
it's
doing that little
task. Trying and lying down to it. If you lie down to anything, it's going to take over.
Listen, when it comes to mental health, the one thing I've learned is the 1% is your medication, speaking to a therapist, talking to friends, da, 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 da. The other 99% of it, it's got to come from you.
Yep.
It's okay, somebody listening.
Yeah, and that's what we tell everybody at the very beginning. Yeah, we're there to support you and we can help and guide you and whatever else, but you have to do the work. If
you have,
you don't do the work and put the work in, then nothing's going to change. And not every appointment, but like every other appointment, sometimes every appointment I'll give people like a wee task, or what we call homework, and it could be like that, try and go to the shops, and it's always try, see as long as you try, even if you don't manage at that time, we can try again.
Absolutely.
As long as you try to do something that we've asked you to try and do, that's all that we can ask of you. Like,
absolutely.
We're not saying it's going to be a miracle and things are going, I'd love to have a magic wand, but we don't have one. But if you can at least try, so if you start to get yourself organised to go to the shop, then you can't quite get there, you've tried. Let's try again next week or tomorrow or whatever day. We can talk it through. It's just trying is the biggest part.
It is. It is massively. And, it, you know, how you recover depends on you. You know, if you're willing to give yourself 100%, then, you know, your recovery process is going to be smaller. If you choose that, you know, I'm going to give you 100% this week, but I'm only going to give you 40% next week. Your recovery is going to be longer.
You're going to take a step back then.
Absolutely. And you only get what you put in. You only get out of it what you put in, because that was another thing I had issues with, actually opening up to my therapist and only giving them snippets of little things that bothered me. And I'd skirt around the main issues. So the therapist could only work with what they had, you know.
And I've said this, I don't know if I've said it to you, but I've definitely said it to other people. It's about, you need to click with your therapist. If you don't click with your therapist, you're never going to open up fully. But when you do click with somebody, and the more that you speak to them and the more you start opening up and you see that you can trust them, then you're going to open up more and more and fully open up. But I know from personal experience that if you don't click with whoever it is,
And that's the tough situation, because you have to be open and honest. And no matter if you think it's the, you know, your world's worst kept secret, your therapist is not there to judge you.
Nope.
They're there to advise and help. Because a lot of the things, I didn't want to tell my therapist because I was scared that, you know, she was going to send the people in the white coats after me and I was going to be locked up. And that's why I withheld a lot of information. Yeah. It was only when I actually did open up that she was like, do you think you're the first one who's ever said that to me?
That's it. But you do, she genuinely do think you're the only person that thinks that way.
Yeah, and it's not. It's, trust me, therapists and psychologists and psychiatrists have heard very strange thoughts and situations. You know, I felt terrible because, you know, when you have that, I'm going to let you in on a deep secret now. But you know when you are doing a driving lessons, for instance?
Yeah.
I used to think, oh, if I just steer this way, I'm going to crash into the wall. Everyone's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
I'd have little weird thoughts like that, or at the top of the stairs, if I pushed Rachel down now, would she break her neck? And I used to think I was really bizarre or weird for having them thoughts, but it's not. I just learned they're intrusive thoughts. That's what they do. It's so far field. And you're not going to act upon them.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but, you know, I suppose it's the red button. Theory, you know, if you see a red button, you want to press it. What does it do? What will happen? It doesn't make you strange or bizarre or weird for having them thoughts. Unfortunately, that's what intrusive thoughts are. You have no control of them. They just pop into your head. So don't think you're weird. What you are is weirdly wonderful. And it's very normal.
And we're all unique. And none of us are perfect. And it doesn't matter how much you try and portray yourself as being perfect. None of us are. We've all done
something.
It's in the past or it might be in our future. We'll all do something to mess up at some point.
But of course.
How you rectify it is shows how you are as a person.
It is. And one thing I learned, you know, intrusive thoughts cannot hurt you.
No.
It's only when you act upon them that they can become hurtful. It's a bad day. It's not a bad life.
Exactly.
You know, and although it doesn't feel it right now, and it's easier said than done. But me and Aileen are both proof of it, that you can come out to the other side. Listen, I'm not going to sit here and say, oh, I'm cured, I'm 100% better. I'm far from it. You know,
when you've been on that journey, what I'd say to everybody is bear in mind, it could be a journey for life.
Mm-hmm.
I know potentially mine's is, because different things that, like I said, the eating disorder and everything else, sometimes I still battle with that, like, every day.
Mm-hmm.
Things that come into my head say, oh, you don't want to do this, or you don't want to do that, or whatever else. But as long as you're willing to fight against that, it's almost like pushing that wall so that it doesn't come too close to you.
Absolutely.
As long as you're willing to fight it and keep yourself happy and healthy, then that's all that you can ask.
That's it. And I still have certain triggers I need to work on. I still will not eat anything that contains peanuts, but it's the only thing I won't eat. Even though I know I'm not allergic to them, I've seen it in black and white. I'm just not willing to take that chance. I've got to work on that. I know I have. Yeah. But honestly, guys, it's
and you'll get them.
That's it. And it's not a taboo subject. It's not don't feel strange or weird. No. Don't think it alone.
It's nice that people are talking about it more now. It's still not spoken about enough. I think schools should be speaking about it a lot more as well.
Absolutely.
You've obviously got the bullying and trolling, which that's going to be my next episode after this one, is to do with that. So you've got all that doesn't help. But yeah, if you're willing to see or even consider that you will have a happy life if you go and get help, then that's all we can ask at the minute.
It is. And guys, if I'm going to do a bit of baptising now. But if you don't follow me already, please join me on TikTok.
Well, that's my next bit to go on about anyways, your TikTok.
Yeah.
Obviously, I said at the beginning, I came across you on TikTok.
Yeah.
So if you don't already follow Caitlin, what is your page? Caitlin and Co.
It's Kate and Co. K-A-I-T and the little funny and sign and C-O. It's a safe space. You know, there's some funny videos on there for you guys to check out.
Comedy, you're still doing your comedy?
I'm still trying. I must admit, I've not been the best at it lately. I've been focusing on driving and doing things with, because we are in better head spaces.
Yeah.
Trying to make up for lost time, I suppose, and going on little dates and stuff. So,
nice.
But we are going to get back into it. We are going to try our best to.
You write all your ideas, yourself, don't you?
I do. No, I try to be funny.
No, they are. They're hilarious. When you start doing all the different accents as well.
Oh, I do three. I do three bit of Scottish and a bit of Welsh and Geordie, but I actually am from Liverpool.
What's the accent you struggle with? Did you say is Irish?
Irish is the hardest one. Catch yourself on. I do try, But it turns into a bit of Scottish, and it's like, oh, I can't actually quite master it. But my sister, she's fantastic at it. But yeah, please do come over, drop us a follow, say hi. You know, it's a safe space. We don't have any judgment. To be honest, I do think a lot of our followers either have some sort of mental health issue or struggle. And we're just in there to have fun and be kind to one another. So, you know, please come over and have a laugh at me and have a laugh with us, you know.
And everybody just gets on when they're on your lives. There's never any drama. Like, I know on TikTok there's a lot of people that they go after the drama, whereas your page is completely opposite. It's very chilled and relaxed.
It is, absolutely, absolutely. And don't feel pressured or anything like that. You can just silently watch. You don't have to get involved, because I know a lot of people have a social aspect of anxiety where they don't want to be
seen.
They just want to just sit and enjoy the company.
Yeah.
You're more than welcome to do so. That's not an issue at all. Like I said, there's a couple of crackpots, I like to say, in the live. You know, we've got my lovely friends Emma, George, Coley, SJ. We're all there together, and we're all there to have fun. So please pop in and say hello.
No, 100%. So have you got any other wee fun facts just before we finish?
Fun facts: don't eat yellow snow.
There you go.
That's a huge one. And just know, guys, that you're worthy. You are accepted. You are wonderfully weird, and it's a bad day, not a bad life.
Exactly. So,
and I just want to say, Aileen, thank you so much for inviting me
today. Thank you so much for coming on. It was great, and I know you were a wee bit stressed just before it, but hopefully it wasn't too bad for you.
No, but you know what? I thoroughly enjoyed myself, and thank you so much for inviting me on. And hopefully I get to come back and have a chat.
I would love to have you back on again, definitely.
That'd be wonderful.
I hope everybody enjoyed that interview with Caitlin. That was pre-recorded. So just to let you all know that the next episode will be about trolling and bullying. So if anybody does have anything that they would like to add in for that episode, then if you can send us a message on any of the social medias as usual, or send an email into rebootyourthoughtspodcast@gmail.com. Don't forget to give Caitlin a follow on TikTok if you're on TikTok. Kate, K-A-I-T, and, which is the and sign, Co, C-O. And I can guarantee you get loads of laughs. I hope you all have a fun week. I hope you've enjoyed the episode, and take care. Bye.